So I am staring at a grilled cheese sandwich on a cracked ceramic plate. The crust is cold and hard, and the cheese has congealed into a dull, rubbery orange that looks like a high-grade structural sealant, I guess. And it's been sitting there for a few hours. And I haven't moved very much because I've been reading about why democracy is a failed biological experiment, and why we should all probably be ruled by a high-efficiency corporate monarch who basically treats citizens like line items in a ledger. So, what I've been reading about is the Dark Enlightenment, which is a concept dreamed up by a certain type of neo-reactionary. So it's a corner of the internet where Silicon Valley accelerationism meets old world authoritarianism. Not exactly a great combo, in my humble opinion. And if you haven't heard of this or run into it yet, well, count yourself lucky. So essentially, it's the belief that the Enlightenment, the whole liberty, equality, and human rights project was a wrong turn. So their belief is that the modern world is like a rotting ship, and instead of trying to fix the leaks, we should just hand the wheel to some technocratic CEO king who can run the state like a private company. So that means no votes, no social justice of any kind, just cold, hard, calculated results. This is what happens when certain people with sociopathic tendencies get disillusioned by the chaos of modern life, and they start craving the certainty of a machine. They aren't just tired of the noise. They've decided that the only way to find peace is to embrace a system that basically views human beings as biological hardware to be optimized and or just discarded altogether. So these people, in a sense, have mistaken the coldness of a server room for the truth of the universe. There's a nice, warm, cozy light in this room. And someone recently mentioned in the comments that it feels like a campfire vibe. And I like that. That's kind of why I've been sticking with this setup lately. Maybe someday I'll be able to actually live somewhere where I can make these videos sitting around a fire. That would be nice. In any case, unfortunately, it feels a little heavy at the moment because when you're digging through these corners of the internet, it just feels like it's highlighting the dust motes floating in the air, doing nothing, going nowhere. That's what these ideas feel like. They don't really move. They just kind of hang there, waiting for you to inhale them. So I've been down this dark enlightenment rabbit hole for a bit, and definitely not because I'm a believer, but because I'm curious and somewhat of a masochist for logic, and I wanted to see where the floor was. But it turns out that there isn't one. It's just a series of trapdoors leading into colder and colder and darker rooms. So the dark enlightenment sees the alliance of mainstream media, Ivy League universities, bureaucracy, and cultural institutions as a cathedral, like a giant invisible church preaching a gospel of progress that isn't actually happening. And look, I get it. I mean, just today, you know, some of this stuff does make sense to me. I mean, just today I walked past a billboard that used a bank to, the billboard was promoting a bank that used a social justice theme to sell, I think it was high interest personal loans. I mean, it's gross. And we're all aware to some degree that we're being micromanaged and manipulated. But the neo-reactionaries of the Dark Enlightenment, they don't want to stop the management. They just think that the current managers are incompetent, and they want a version of the world where the human part of human resources is finally mercifully deleted forever. I see this as ultimately an anti-human philosophy, but it's wrapped in a very expensive looking tuxedo. So as I'm looking at this this lamp in front of me, I'm noticing that there's a smudge at the base where I adjusted it earlier. There's just a little mark of my thumb there. But that smudge, it's actually representative of the argument. And what I mean by that is it's the human variable that the Dark Enlightenment guys want to solve. Or just completely delete. They don't want any smudges anywhere. So they talk about the concept of non. It's spelled G-N-O-N with a silent G, which is an acronym for the God of nature or nature's law. And it's their justification or their way of saying that the universe is nothing but a cold auditing force. Now, in some ways, I agree with that somewhat bleak assessment. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the concept of non in and of itself. But when it's viewed through the eyes of dark enlightenment reactionaries, neo-reactionaries, it becomes like the philosophy of the schoolyard bully who grew up and learned how to code and maybe read a little Nietzsche for some philosophical credibility or something. But there is a trick there, like a sleight of hand, because what they're doing is taking the reality of nature, the fact that we're part of a biosphere, that we have to adapt or die, and then they twist it into something pathological. So they see a forest, and they only see the competition for light. They don't see the mycelium connecting the roots and the the weird hidden cooperation that keeps the whole thing breathing. So they want nature to be a justification for a boardroom coup. Personally, I believe in the biosphere. I believe in the dirt and the changing seasons, and the fact that if we don't respect the rhythm of the planet, it'll probably flick us off like a flea. That's a kind of non, I guess. But my non isn't a dystopian technocratic CEO. It isn't interested in this tech efficiency obsession. By their standards, a redwood tree, for instance, is spectacularly inefficient because it takes, I don't know, something like 500 years to just stand there. It doesn't produce any value. Well, I mean, unless you cut it down and use it for lumber. The Dark Enlightenment tries to hijack the awe that we feel for nature, and it weaponizes it against our own humanity. And they tell you that because the storm doesn't care about your feelings, you shouldn't care about them either. So they want you to become as cold and calculating as a server rack just to prove you're realistic. When you spend enough time reading through their ideology, you start to feel like you're being, I don't know, I get this feeling like I'm being scrubbed clean of my human filth. Their version of the exit from modern society is like the ultimate trump card. They talk about seceding from the cathedral and building these hypertech authoritarian city-states, these seasteads, they call them. Or basically corporate fiefdoms where there's a CEO king running his experiments without any oversight, without being bothered by, you know, those pesky human rights or the inconvenience of a public vote. That, to me, is a surgical fantasy. They want to secede from the mass of the human condition. That's really what it all boils down to. And the thing is, look, I want to exit too. A lot of us do. I want out of the insanity as much as anybody. I just don't want to do it like that, like them. The difference is, I'm not looking for a startup monarchy. I just want a small, sustainable life that's more connected to nature. Maybe a few acres, I don't know, a community where you actually know the person who's growing your carrots. I want a version of life that's built around humanism. Real, face-to-face accountability, not some dystopian techno-feudalism. So their version of the exit is just it's a relocation of the ego. It's the Jungian shadow given a venture capital budget and a God complex. They don't want to leave the system. They want to be the new system. They're tired of being subjects, so they've decided they should be kings. Now, this is, to me, this looks like some kind of adolescent fantasy of total control. It's a way to hide from the vulnerability of being a person among other people. So they want a fortress. Most of us just want a home. They want to turn the world into a digital clock, precise, something precise and utterly predictable. On the other hand, I'd rather just live in, I don't know, something like an overgrown orchard without any clocks. And yes, an orchard would be a responsibility. But in an orchard, things actually live and grow there. And it breathes. But in their clock world, nothing grows. It's just endless ticking. There's no room for the soul in a clock. There's no room for the shadow either, which is why the shadow ends up running the whole show. When you try to build a society based purely on cold logic, you aren't actually escaping the human nature. You're just suppressing the parts of it that you don't like until they eventually mutate into something unrecognizable and violent. So, as I glance over the that congealed grilled cheese again, it's a failure of a sandwich, right? Well, in a neo-reactionary utopia, that sandwich shouldn't even exist because the process that created it was inefficient. I was distracted and thinking of something else, so I was being useless to the machine. But that uselessness, that's the loophole. That's where the sovereignty lives. True sovereignty isn't, it's not about building a high-tech fortress on a seastead or something. It's about the ability to care about things that don't have a return on investment. Now, the new reactionary guys, they think that they've unplugged from the cathedral. All they've done really is just plugged into a different socket. It's just a socket that feeds on their vanity and their fear of being ordinary. When I stand up and I hear my back making a popping sound, that's a reminder that I'm a biological mess. I'm not a dark enlightenment unit of throughput. I'm an animal that needs sunlight and some sense of belonging, and you can't code your way out of that. So, the dirt doesn't care about their exit strategies. If we're going to survive what's coming, I don't think it's going to be because we found a smarter way to be machines. I think it'll be because we found a better way to be better humans and to actually adapt to the ground that we're standing on instead of the digital heaven that these guys are trying to sell us. So as I'm looking out the window here, it's dark but I know the trees are out there and they're not optimizing. They're just growing. And I see a quiet power in that because that is a refusal to be micromanaged by anyone's manifestos. So in front of me, I can see the reflection of the lamp in the glass, in the window glass. And there's a double image there, double pane window. One's clear and one is a kind of ghostly looking, I guess. And it makes me think about how much of this dark enlightenment stuff is just, it's a haunting. It's the ghost of every authoritarian impulse we thought we'd buried. But now it's coming back because apparently we're just too tired to keep that door shut. And the reason that it's so seductive, it isn't because it's logical, it's because it's just easy. There's a terrifying amount of labor that involved in being a sovereign human being. We have a responsibility and we have to make very hard choices. We have to live with a lot of ambiguity, ambiguity of not knowing if we're right. And we have to look at the utter chaos of the world and accept that nobody's coming to fix anything with some master key or some perfect algorithm or whatever. But then something like the Dark Enlightenment comes along and offers us a king that they call a CEO or a director. But it's really just the same old shape. It's the patriarchal father figure. And it's a massive relief to the Jungian shadow. We've pretty much spent the last century trying to be adults, trying to manage this pluralistic, screeching version of democracy. And we're exhausted. The Dark Enlightenment is basically. It's basically an intellectualized temper tantrum. It's the part of us that it's tired of the noise saying, listen, just let someone else handle it. Someone smarter, someone more effective who won't ask me for my opinion anymore. So we're surrendering our cognitive sovereignty because we're suffering from choice fatigue, choice paralysis. The Jungian shadow part of us that we don't like to talk about at dinner parties loves the idea of a king. It loves the idea of being told what the so-called truth is, especially if that truth makes us feel like we're part of some secret enlightened elite. So it's a way to offload the moral weight of being alive. If the CEO king says the biosphere is just a resource to be burned for acceleration, then you don't have to feel the sting of the smoke in your own lungs. You're just following the script. You're just aligned with your distorted view of non. Sometimes when I reach for my phone, I'll stop with my thumb hovering over the screen, ready to check for a notification that doesn't exist. That's the micro version of the surrender. We've already outsourced our attention to these little black mirrors, right? So why not outsource our entire political and moral agency to a sovereign corporation? I mean, that's the mentality. So the neo-reactionaries think, they think that they're being rebels, but they're actually the ultimate conformists, because they're conforming to the most basic and primitive human urge, the desire to be a subject. So when you're alone late at night, maybe sometimes you have this uncomfortable realization where you realize that freedom isn't always a gift. It's also a burden. Jean-Paul Sartre famously said that man is condemned to be free. I think most of the people talking about cognitive sovereignty or the red pill, they're actually just looking for a new master who speaks a language that they find more flattering. They don't want real freedom. They want to be, right in a way that allows them to just stop thinking. They don't want the burden of responsibility anymore. The thing is, real sovereignty, the humanist kind, that's a lonely and messy business. And it's what happens when you look at that CEO king fantasy and you realize it's really just that's really just a digital mask for a very old and very human insecurity, which is the desire to be protected from the storm. But I believe in the storm. I think the storm is the point. The biosphere we live in, you know, the one that actually grows the food and cleans the water, it doesn't have a CEO. It's a decentralized, seemingly random, beautifully inefficient network of relationships. Ironically, it's actually incredibly efficient. It doesn't need a king to tell it how to adapt. It adapts because every single cell, every organism is doing its own sovereign work of staying alive and staying connected. When we try to trade that for a technocratic clock, that's not evolution. We're just building, that's just building a smaller cage. I'm thinking about the way we talk to each other these days. Like, everything's a debate now. Everything is a war for the narrative. And it seems like our minds have become these little fortresses. And the Dark Enlightenment folks, they're just trying to sell us, I guess, better bricks for our fortresses. But I think maybe the point of sovereignty isn't to build a better fortress. It's to realize that the walls are what's keeping the light out. So I'm looking at that smudge in the lamp again because it's actually, I don't know, I see it as a little reminder that I'm not a sovereign individual in the way the neo-reactionaries mean. I'm, you know, like, I guess, like, in the way they mean, like, some isolated, powerful unit or something, ultra-efficient unit. I'm a sovereign person because I'm flawed. And because I'm connected to things that I can't control. And I refuse, or I'm trying my best to refuse to let a spreadsheet dictate and determine the value of my life. That's my strength. They want a world of functions, but I'm over here sticking with the oily smudge instead. That's the ultimate trick of the Dark Enlightenment. They want to convince you that the physical world, the proverbial dirt, the congealed cheese on the plate, it's all just a legacy system. They want you to believe that the only thing that matters is the hard sovereignty of the intellect. The part of you that can calculate, enhance, and at some point exit. But the thing is, hard sovereignty is actually, it's actually a brittle thing. It's like the sovereignty of a bunker, for example. You can build the thickest walls in the world and stock them with the best logic and the fastest processors, but you're still just a person sitting down there in a fancy hole waiting for the air to run out. So I'm thinking of the soft sovereignty of the biosphere instead. You know, and if you look at how a forest survives a fire, it isn't because some king tree gave a command. It's because the system is redundant and it's messy, but it's deeply connected. So the sovereignty is, it's distributed, which means that every leaf, every bug and fungal spore is doing its own small, inefficient bit of living. They don't have a CEO. But what it does have is a resilience that no corporation is ever going to touch. And the neo-reactionaries, they hate this because they see this kind of decentralization as entropy. They see the mess of humanism, you know, the empathy and the compromise, and they see all this as a bug in the code. So they want something like a hard reset. The thing is that hard reset usually means deleting the data that you don't like. Now, I think about some people. Think about some people that I know, like my neighbor, who spends several hours every Saturday fixing a lawnmower that probably belongs in a museum. And I think about a person I know who gets emotional at commercials for dog food. Now, in the Dark Enlightenment world, these people are seen as low utility. They're seen as unfit. But to me, they're the only ones who are actually sovereign because they haven't been streamlined yet. They haven't been corrupted. And they still have parts of themselves that don't belong to the market or the state or this neo-reactionary version of non. You don't have to be some kind of genius to possess real cognitive sovereignty. It's just about being unharvestable and having a soft interior. So this is the place of ambiguity where you can say, I don't know, or this feels wrong. Even if you can't prove it with a spreadsheet. Now, the neo-reactionaries, they want to turn your mind into a fortress. But a fortress, well, it's also a fortress is also a target. Personally, I'd rather my mind be like uncharted territory. You can't really govern what you haven't mapped. And I'm not handing over the map. If I stand up and walk to the fridge behind me, the floorboards will creak. That's a glitch too, I guess, which means it's a failure of structural silence. But I like that sound because it means that the house is, in a sense, it's moving with me. There's an organic relationship happening here. We're being told that we have to choose between the cathedral of modern bureaucracy and the darkness of tech authoritarianism. That's where we're at. But to me, that is a false choice because that's like being asked, well, do you want to be eaten by a shark or a lion? I'm choosing the third option, the garden. No, I don't really want to be eaten by the garden. The garden isn't a state or a corporation. It's a place where you work with the land, not against it. So this is where you build small and sustainable human scale things, and it's where exit doesn't necessarily mean leaving the world. It just means coming back to it in a much healthier way. And I think it's about leaving the digital hive mind to go plant something that won't, you know, give you a like or a share, but it might actually give you a tomato in August. Imagine that. So that's the humanist defense here. It isn't flashy. It doesn't have a cool aesthetic or an edgy manifesto. It's just the silent, humble, stubborn refusal to be an exploited unit. So it's the realization that our cognitive sovereignty is rooted in our biological reality. We aren't brains in vats, not yet, anyway. Or I should add, not that I'm aware of. And we aren't code that I'm aware of. We're basically complex animals that evolved to live in groups and to care about the soil and maybe find some meaning in the inefficient act of loving someone or something else. So I see the dark enlightenment as a philosophy for people who've forgotten what it feels like to be tired in a way that sleep can't fix. They've basically traded their humanity for some sovereign fantasy. And then they wonder why the world feels so cold. The neo-reactionaries want, they want a sterile light that bleaches the life and the soul out of everything. And they want to solve the human equation by deleting the human and trading the messy human reality for some clockwork monarchy that never deviates. But I think the real exit, it's not some high-tech fortress. The real exit is the refusal to be an asset. And I think the real exit is the soft sovereignty of the garden. Knowing you don't control the storm, you just learn how to accept it and, you know, weather it. So they can keep their startup kingdoms. I'd rather have the dirt and the soul and the right to be a person who doesn't make sense on some spreadsheet. Well, all right. I guess that's all I have on that today. As I always say, thanks for listening.